As we attend to mindfulness of breathing, it's the different focuses of attention that are possible. It's important to say recognize the possibilities or the different ways that. And modes of attention in that, using the body as a basis for attention, using feeling as a basis for attention. All of this is happening within the sphere of this mindfulness of breathing. This is your kind of your baseline that the mindfulness of the in-breath and mindfulness of the out-breath is the sort of your base, your foundation. And from that base, then your direct attention to the body, to feelings, and also to the mind. This is the third tetrad in the discourse on mindfulness of breathing. It's the third foundation of mindfulness, and it's a necessary foundation to be attentive to, because the mind is where we experience things. That's the function of the citta. Is where we experience things. That's all the functions of our awareness, cognition, perception, the conceptualizations within the mind, emotions. These are all sort of happening on the mind base. And this is the first step in in this tetrad, experiencing the mind. I breathe in, experiencing the mind. I breathe out, so that the recognizing what is happening within the mind, because we experience things within the mind, and more often than not we don't actually see it or recognize it as this is just the mind. We see it as this is me. There's the assumption of me-ness, mindness. And there's whatever mental state or mood is experienced is then experienced as the this is me. It's seen as the external world that is believed in, invested interest in, and we end up deluded by. So we spend our time either deluded by the world outside us or deluded by ourselves, assumption of selfness, of me-ness, as Ajahn Chah would oftentimes say, the one who is lost in the world is lost in their moods. One who is lost in their moods is lost in the world. These are there's just that basic confusion, misapprehension of reality. And so the foundation to be able to cut through that and at least get a beginning toehold on reality is experiencing the mind, recognizing clearly what is the mind, what is going on in the mind. It's like in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha, when he describes the cittanupassana, the mindfulness of the recollection of the mind, and he's saying it's seeing the mind with desire as the mind with desire, the mind without desire as the mind without desire, the mind with aversion as the mind with aversion, the mind without aversion as the mind without aversion, the mind with delusion as the mind with delusion, the mind without delusion as the mind without delusion. And seeing these fundamental conditionings of the mind, or the additions to the mind, the defilements of mind, kilesa, and whether they're there or not, whether they're conditioning the mind, because we tend to, that is, you know, what we take as the mind, is that it's you know, how it manifests itself, and generally we get, you know, spun around by greed, hatred, and delusion. And we're not usually aware of when the mind is without greed, hatred, and delusion. So we're not not attentive to it, not recognizing, not experiencing the mind in its true nature. So that experiencing the mind, when we really experience it fully, the mind with greed, with hatred, with delusion, seeing. Then the direct experience of that is suffering. We see very clearly. As soon as we acquiesce to the mind of greed, of hatred, of delusion, we're also acquiescing to suffering. We're also accepting, welcoming, giving sort of full throttle to suffering. And if we experience that with mindfulness and clarity, then the result would be stepping back from that. It's just, why would we make ourselves suffer? But because we don't experience it with mindfulness, we don't experience it clearly, we don't experience it this full awareness, then we just sort of bumble along, and that's the that's kind of the story of our lives. So that experiencing the mind without greed, without hatred, without delusion, that, you say, that has a very opposite effect. When we experience that fully, we really take note of and recognize clearly. This is what the experience of a mind without greed is like. This is what the experience of the mind without aversion, without delusion, this is what it's like. This is what the experience is. This is how it manifests itself. Then the experience is one of just alleviation of suffering, being free from suffering, an experience of well-being and peace. And that is just gives a whole different perspective on say on our human existence, that we can actually live without greed, hatred, and delusion. And it's a this is a this is really the direction we want to be going in. This is really what is satisfying. And anything else is painful. So that these clear recognition of these fundamental forces in the human mind. Also, the Buddha describing the cittanupassana, satipatthana, knowing the contracted mind as contracted, knowing the distracted mind as distracted, knowing the exalted mind as exalted, knowing the unexalted mind as unexalted, knowing the concentrated mind as concentrated, knowing the unconcentrated mind as unconcentrated, knowing the developed mind as developed, knowing the undeveloped mind as undeveloped, knowing the liberated mind as liberated, knowing the unliberated mind as unliberated. And so that this understanding the mind, understanding what is going on in the mind, what is the mood of the mind, what is the basic content of the mind, and what its repercussions are. So that we in using this mindfulness of breathing and just experiencing the mind, I breathe in, experiencing the mind, I breathe out. Starting to really hone in and attend to the mind itself. And we've been laying the foundations of calmness and clarity, mindfulness and awareness, through using using the body, using that, and obviously the breath in its many guises, ways, using the different ways of really relaxing and settling the body, settling the mind, so we can really start to look at the mind itself. And it's like peering into sort of the world of our inner experience, and seeing more clearly, what is it that motivates us, what pushes us, what is it that is peaceful and liberating, and what is it that is entangling and painful. And it's the mind that creates that. We can And to take a real interest in your own mind. That's not just sort of relying on theory or what one's heard. one uses those for pointers, but to be really looking at, well, what is my experience? What do I know about my own mind? Larry Rosenberg gives a little story of when he was teaching a kind of an introduction to meditation over a, I can't remember, it was like an 8-week period or something. It's an ongoing course that he teaches at the Cambridge Insight Meditation Society. He had these and people who there's many people who joined this course, but there were these three professors from Harvard who joined, and two of them were actually Buddhist scholars, and there's all of these three of them all had sort of PhDs, and two of them were Buddhist scholars with their PhDs in Buddhist studies, and one of them was a PhD in political science. He was a Yugoslavian communist, kind of communist Marxist, who the only reason, and he thought religion was just for idiots. Sort of soft-headed idiots, and the only reason why he was taking the course is because his girlfriend was really interested in Buddhism and was on the course, and then if he didn't come along to the course, then he figured he was jeopardizing his opportunities with his girlfriend. So. He was there was a wasn't a, a particularly noble intention, but by the end of the course, I said these two sort of PhDs in Buddhist studies hadn't really sort of made their minds peaceful at all or learned very much about their because they were always looking at it, trying to compare it to you know, some treatise or some book or some something they've heard from somewhere else, and or they were trying to stack it, line it up against the sort of Buddhist Abhidhamma and sort of Buddhist maps of the mind, and they forgot to look at their own minds. Whereas this sort of hard-headed kind of Marxist was took a real interest in his own mind, and had some really quite remarkable results, and was very and gained a lot of faith in the practice, because he was willing to look at his own mind. So you know, for ourselves, this is what the practice is about. When we say experiencing the mind, you know, what comes up? Do we start, you know, looking at what such and such a teacher writes about the mind, or such and such a sutta says about the mind, or such and such a theory of mind is in this particular school of Buddhism? Or do we really start to look at our own minds? What is the mind that has greed? What is the mind that doesn't have greed? What is the mind without hatred? What is it like with hatred? How do we experience that? So that really on the each in-breath and each out-breath, really being attentive to the mind. What is the mind? What's going on in the mind? What's the feeling? What's the tone? What's the mood? What is it? What's its kind of content? What's it And that is really attentive to that. You know, this is where in Khrus Ajahn Chah is very much pushing us in that direction all the time, you know, to be studying the mind. He'd oftentimes say that, and just to, you know, to put away the books and to study the mind. Just study your own heart, study your own minds. This is what, say, living in the forest, practicing in the forest, is very helpful for, because it gives us the opportunity to, say, step back from a lot of distractions, external distractions. I mean, we find all sorts of distractions in our own mind, but then, you know, we don't have any excuse then. I remember one time, the first year that we went out to Phujomgom, which is a branch monastery on the border of Laos, and it's a very remote area, very simple surroundings, very, very quiet, probably one of the quietest places I've ever experienced in Thailand. And we went out there. This is the first year that we went out, started the place up, and spending the rains retreat out there. We were asking one of the monks during the retreat how it was going, how the meditation was going. And he says, "Well, I guess it's going great." I said, "I'm not very peaceful, but I don't have any excuses anymore." So that recognizing that you know, there's so often we just the mind comes up with all its excuses of why it should be distracted or what it needs to be thinking about, and when you're in a peaceful setting, a peaceful environment, then you realize that, you know, well, that's just more stuff in the mind, and sort of mind driven. It's not at all the reality of things, and in actuality, that's pretty much what it's like all the time. You know, we don't need to be filling our minds with greed, hatred, and delusion just for the fun of it, or just because it's some sort of duty or expectation. We take that on voluntarily, and you know, we don't recognize it, we don't see it clearly. So that experiencing the mind, really being attentive to the, you know, what is that mood in the mind, what is it conditioned by, what's its feeling tone, what are the constituents of it. This is the, these are sort of experiencing the mind. you know, the different ways that the mind just gets, you know, caught in its distraction or contraction, or even, you know, goes to an exalted state, and, you know, very sublime. Do we just see that as the mind, or do we then immediately add on to it of, you know, my mind is in a contracted state or a distracted state, therefore I am a diminished being, I'm not a worthy person, I'm not a good meditator, or the mind comes into an experience of some sublime radiance, and it becomes extraordinarily peaceful and radiant. And then do we, you know, do is that just experienced as mine? Or is it then, you know, wow, I really got it now. I've got the handle on Buddhism now. I'm really getting my meditation together now. I'm a good meditator now. My practice is really good now. Wait till I tell the Ajahn. You know what? You know they. Or is it just experiencing the mind? Experiencing the mind, I breathe in. Experiencing the mind, I breathe out. and not getting caught in the additions of who I am, what I am within that. On a certain level, that sense of recognizing more clearly what the mind is. On a certain level, say jitta, you know, is a neutral word or base. It sort of has potential for so many things. Say mind. I mean, actually, mind is a good translation of jitta, because jitta is sort of the kind of the framework, the container, or the space that is then utilized by all the different aspects of mind. But it has this fundamental say potential for awareness, and then there's all the moods of the mind, all the movement of the mind. This is what when Ajahn Chah went to pay respects to Ajahn Mun. this was really the big thing that he came away from his meeting with Ajahn Mun. Was the advice that Ajahn Mun gave to start discerning and recognizing more clearly what's the difference between the mind and the moods of the mind. So that there's this fundamental mind base that has its potential of clarity and knowing. And then there's all the moods of the mind, the moods of joy and sorrow, the moods of sort of intelligence and confusion, the moods of the irritation or kindness and compassion. All of these are moods of the mind, moods of the mind, objects of the mind. And underlying that is this sort of fundamental mind base, the mind itself. That is, when we're sitting and meditating and practicing to, you know, as you're breathing in, experiencing the mind and really taking that observation and discernment to sort of cut through, you know, what's just the mood, the object, the content of the mind, and what is the fundamental mind base? What's the fundamental that And that the experiencing the citta in its simplicity and its openness, that is a really coming back to that experiencing the citta and recognizing the citta as that potential. And we have the potential of being very peaceful, unshaken, because that's, you know, in the same way that the images that are often used, like the sky and the clouds, where the sky is just, you have this open blue sky, and then you have the clouds that pass through it. The sun, the moon, they sort of pass through the sky, but behind it all, and we get attracted to make all the commentary on the clouds, on the sun, on the different things that we see in the sky, and we don't pay much attention to the sky itself. We take it for granted. And similar with the mind, we get attracted to, we get averse to, we get confused by, we get intellectually stimulated by the content of the mind, the moods that pass through the mind, and we fail to direct attention to that mind. The mind of knowing, the mind of that is able to just be present, to be clear, to know clearly. So that experiencing the mind, and this is where it's so necessary to develop the stillness within the mind. The mind is there all the time, and if we can take it for granted, distract ourselves from it. It's there all the time, but we need to attend to it in a way that we start to appreciate its potential, so that the stillness, if we're always stirring it up, always adding things to it, always proliferating within it, then we fail to recognize its potential. We fail to taste the fruit of the say the potential of the mind. So to the meditation and the developing of stillness, the still, settled, clear mind is gives us a window of opportunity to recognize more clearly that potential within the mind. And those developing of samadhi is, it's a necessary part of the cultivation. And the samadhi has conditions, and it has it comes and goes, and it's sometimes on a seemingly random basis, but you keep plugging away at it. Because it gives us an opportunity to experience the mind, and as we experience the mind, then we can start to recognize, okay, this is mind, and these are the objects of mind. This is the moods of the mind. And the mood of the mind can then be experienced within a framework. And it can be, and when we see that more clearly, then it's so much easier to let go of the moods of the mind, the objects of the mind, the content of the mind. There's again that tendency of taking the content, the mood of the mind, and either taking it as self, this is who I am, this is me, this is mine, or taking the you know, what is just a mood of the mind, and looking on the world, extrapolating it out to the world being pleasant, unpleasant, desirable, undesirable. And it's not because of the world. The world is just sort of as it is. The things outside of us are just as they are. It's us that imbue meaning into it and give value to it through the mind itself, through the mood of the mind. And you see that all the time, certain situations, or even just on a day-to-day basis, you come down into the meditation hall. And some days you're looking forward to the meditation, sometimes you're dreading it. And what is it, the space? Is this the world, or the being? It's either dreadful or delightful or whatnot. But no, it's the mind creating the putting the value on it. But it's, it's believable. We keep believing it. To returning to the experiencing the mind. Just be present with the breath and the awareness of the breath, and then directing it to that sense of what is the mind and what are the moods of the mind. And this jitta is there's a lot of interpretations, and there's a lot of it can be pretty confusing sometimes. Sometimes conflicting definitions and ways that it's talked about. But it's like in that. Even in the tradition, it's like there's a very well known discourse that where the Buddha talks about this mind being radiant, but it is defiled by adventitious defilements. Stained by adventitious defilements, and then they talk about say papasara citta, the mind, this mind is radiant, and then the commentary then goes off in saying, well, the papasara citta, the mind is, this is the kind of bhavanga. Jitta, the sort of the subconscious stream of subconsciousness, but in that discourse, the Buddha talks about this. But it is stained by adventitious defilements, but it can be purified of those adventitious defilements. You know, you can't do much with a Bhavanga Chitta. I mean, it's just sort of, it's this subconscious stream that is there. It's not really, it's not really, it's just sort of a force in nature. So it's you know, the Chitta in that sense is much more the potential for a mind of peace, of freedom from suffering. It's a potential. The Chitta is a container. It's not a fixed thing. Or sometimes when people talk of, say, the Pabhasara Chitta, as if it's this is the kind of like the unconditioned. The unconditioned, the mind of original mind, sort of thing of the being, the unconditioned mind. But then, I mean, you can't really do much with the unconditioned mind either. That's sort of an end point. And then what would the unconditioned mind be having adventitious defilements coming into it? It's not really part of the picture. So that this, the citta has its potential of radiance, but it needs to be trained, needs to be purified, needs to be seen clearly for what it is, and seeing that, okay, it can experience greed, it can experience non-greed, it can experience anger, and it can experience non-anger, it can experience delusion, it can experience non-delusion. It has all those potentials. It can be distracted, it can be exalted, it can be concentrated, it can be unconcentrated, it can be liberated, it can be unliberated. And it's up to us to experience it so clearly, so fully, that the obvious thing is to allow that which is unsettling the mind to drop away and to return to the stillness of the mind, its potential to just be the knowing, that base of knowing. So when Tanchukun Dhammapito and Papayuto defines citta, it's the which receives the objects of the senses and knows them, and the mind being another sense, that which knows and brings it into the heart, that sort of the citta being the fundamental awareness that knows and knows clearly. So that experiencing the mind, experiencing the citta, experiencing that capacity for knowing, and returning to that knowing, staying with that knowing, recognizing that that's where our refuge of peace is. It's not in the moods of the mind, the objects of the senses, the world outside. It has a We obviously can't shut it out, and there's no point in trying to negate it, because we just end up spinning ourselves out that way. But having a ground to experience it from, that is the citta. Experiencing the citta, experiencing the mind, and not being drawn out into the confusion of Sankajan Chas, is one who's lost in the world, is lost in the moods of their mind. One who gets lost in the moods of their mind gets lost in the world. And that not being lost in either of those, or confused with them, returning to the citta, returning to the knowing. I'll offer that for reflection this morning.